among the five grievous sins, the order that did two, wounding the Buddha. In fact, he tried to kill the Buddha, but he was not successful. So Buddha was wounded when he pushed the rock onto the Buddha, when Buddha was walking up and down. So that was one. And the other is causing the division in the Sangha, or schism in the Sangha. So he did two grievous Buddhist sins. And so it is said that he is now in the lowest hell, and he will be there for the rest of the eon, for the rest of this world cycle. So that is what is meant by saying here, that lasts for the eon. And while the other, now Ajatasattu, also went to hell immediately after his death, but he will not suffer in hell for the rest of the eon. So that is a difference. So the constant is gross when giving results that last for the aeon, and it is not gross, it is subtle when the result lasts not for the aeon. And of those giving results lasting for the aeon, the unprompted is gross while the prompted is subtle. So they are relative subtlety and grossness. But that accompanied by greed is gross when associated with false view, while the other is subtle and so on. Here also constant and inconstant.
Would his instigation be considered, if he wouldn't have done all these other things, if he would have caused the man to kill his own father, since he's the one would he go to hell automatically on that? In other words, Devadatta instigating
Ajatasattu
to kill his father.
Yeah, but it was he who killed his own father.
Yes, but I'm wondering though, on the other, if he wouldn't have had this other comma with respect to the Buddha, etc., is it because you're causing somebody to kill their own father, so would that be considered a breaking of that, or in other words, it's his instigation that you get somebody to do that. So
yeah, his instigation can be taken as killing a being, but for Ajatasattu, that being happened to be his father. So Ajatasattu's akusala was grosser than of Devadatta.
So it would actually, it would only count then if one actually instigated to kill your own father, it doesn't count the same as instigating somebody else to kill their father.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
We're not recommending any of these.
Furthermore, the profitable of the sense sphere is gross, and that of the five material sphere is subtle, and so on. And so they are just relative. And then, 207. According to location, painful feelings in hell are gross, while in the animal generation or animal kingdom they are subtle, and then so on and so on. Those among the Paranimitta Vasavati deities, that is, the highest of the lower celestial realms, are subtle only, and the pleasant should be construed throughout life, the painful where suitable. So by plaint also there can be subtlety and grossness relative. And according to physical basis, any feeling that has an inferior physical basis is gross, while one with the superior physical basis is subtle. What is gross should be regarded as inferior in the inferior-superior classification, and what is subtle-superior. And then far and near. The unprofitable is far from the profitable and indeterminate. And the word near in the way beginning. Unprofitable beginning is near to unprofitable feeling. Therefore, unprofitable feeling is far from the profitable, and the indeterminate, because of dissimilarity, unconnectedness, and non-resemblance. And the profitable and the indeterminate are likewise far from the unprofitable. So kusala and kusala and abhyagata are far from akusala. And so in all instances. But unprofitable feeling is nearer to unprofitable feeling because of similarity and resemblance. So this is the detailed explanation dealing with the past and so on. Perception, formation, and consciousness, they should be understood similarly. And then classes of knowledge of the five aggregates, that is, in the order of the five aggregates, and then distinction and so on. So there are different kinds of orders we find in the suttas and in Abhidhamma. So here he describes all the orders. The first is what? Order of arising. Sometimes things are described or in the order of arising. So first there comes to be the fetus in the first stage, then there comes to be the fetus in the second stage, and so on. So that is the order of arising. So the first stage arises first, and then second stage arises, and then third stage arises, and so on. So if it is described this way, then it is described in the order of arising. Things to be abandoned by seeing, things to be abandoned by development, it comes from Abhidhamma, etc., is the order of abandoning. That means things to be abandoned by seeing means the mental defilements abandoned by the first path, Sotapatthimagga. And things to be abandoned by development means those abandoned by the upper three maggas. So it is in order of abandoning. Then purification of virtue, purification of consciousness, etc., is in order of practice. You know, there are seven purifications or seven stages of purity in the practice of vipassana. Purity of morals, here virtue, purity of consciousness, purity of view, purity of overcoming doubt, and so on. So these are described in the order of practice. So with regard to these stages of purity, you cannot skip. Say, you cannot practice purification of consciousness before you practice purification of virtue. So they should be practiced one after the other in this order. So it is the order of practice. And sometimes they are described in order of playing. That means the sense sphere, the fine material sphere, and so on. The karma, vajra, rupa, vajra, arupa, vajra, and so on. This is in order of playing. And sometimes just the order of teaching. That means in the teaching, Buddha gives this first, and then the other second, and the other third. There is no particular merit in say putting this first and the other second, and so on. So the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four right effort, etc., or talk on giving, that means a Dhamma talk on giving, Dhamma talk on virtue, and so on, is order of teaching. So there are four foundations of mindfulness. First is what? Contemplation on the body, then on feeling, then on consciousness, and then on Dhamma objects. They are not to be practiced one after the other. See, they are not to meant to be practiced. It is not meant that you must practice body contemplation first, and then go to feeling contemplation, and then to consciousness contemplation. Not in this way. Because the description here is not according to the order of practice, but just the order of teaching.
This quote about talk on giving and talk on virtue, those happen to be the first two paramitas. Where did that come from in the Mahayana?
Here, it is a stock phrase. we often come across in the sutras. When a Buddha's a teaching of somebody is mentioned, then it is mentioned in this way. The Buddha talked to him first about giving, and then about virtue, and then about the celestial worlds, and then about getting dispassionate towards sensual things, and so on. So it is a Buddha's way of teaching people. So first he talk about dana, giving, then about sila, and so on and so on.
The others don't follow the first two,
yes. Yeah. Okay. You can find it in Majjhima Nikaya here. But these passages are scattered through the whole of the Pali Canon. Of these, firstly, order of arising is not applicable here. So here we have first what? Rupa, right? And then feeling, vedana, and then perception, sanya, and then sankhara, mental formation, and then consciousness. So this order is not order of arising. We are not to understand that rupa arises first, and then feeling arises, and then perception arises, and so on. So not in this way. So it is, this order of arising is not applicable here. And what about order of abandoning? No. Because, in fact, rupa cannot be abandoned. Then is it an order of practice? No. Then what about order of play? No. So only one remains, and that is the order of teaching. So it Buddha happens to teach in this way, in this order. So the order of teaching is explained in paragraph 213. And then as to distinction, that means there are two kinds of aggregates, just the aggregates, and then aggregates as objects of clinging. So Buddha taught in two names. So sometimes he taught just the aggregate. Sometimes he taught aggregates of clinging. So what is the difference between these two? Now, when Buddha said aggregate, he meant all there is. Say, aggregate of feeling means all feeling, mundane, mundane and supramundane. But if when he says aggregate of clinging, then he means only those are mundane. Those are the object of kankas. So that is the difference. So down the paragraph you will see any kind of materiality, whatever, far or near, that is subject to kankas and liable to the clingings. So that is the explanation of why they are called the aggregates of clinging. So aggregates of clinging means aggregates which are subject to kankas, which are liable to the clingings. Briefly, aggregates that are objects of clinging, that are objects of mental defilements. When Buddha explained the first noble truth, and at the end of that explanation, Buddha said, in brief, five aggregates of clinging are dukkha, right? So he used the word five aggregates of clinging. So that means he means the mundane and chetas, mundane chetasikas, rupa. So that is the difference. Aggregate means all, but aggregates of clinging means only those that are object of clinging or object of kankas. Now, in the paragraph 215, about the middle of the paragraph, but feeling, etc., are only mentioned among the simple aggregates when they are free from kankas. What do you think about that? feeling, etc., are only mentioned among the simple aggregates when they are free from kankas. Can you agree with that? Now, aggregates, simple aggregates, and aggregates of clinging, right? Aggregate means all, right? Aggregates of clinging means only those that are object of clinging, right? Now here, feeling, etc., are only mentioned among the aggregates when they are free from kankas. Feeling are only mentioned among the simple aggregates when they are free from kankas. I think that's all right.
Because when they're not free from kankas,
they are mentioned when they are free from kankas.
And when they aren't free from kankas,
they are included in aggregates of clinging. I think that's correct. In Pali, the word only is to be after the simple aggregates, and not before mentioned. So the feeling, etc., are mentioned among the simple aggregates only when they are free from kankas. When they are not, they are included in the aggregates of clinging. Okay. And then as to neither less nor more, why are there only five aggregates? Neither less nor more. Because all formed things that resemble each other fall into these groups and so on. So this is the explanation of why there are only five and not four or not six and so on. Then, as to the simile, so paragraph 220, the material aggregate of clinging is like a sick room, because it is a dwelling place, as physical basis, door, and object of the sick man, namely the consciousness aggregate as object of clinging. Feeling aggregate as object of clinging is like the sickness, because it afflicts. So feeling is like sickness. Perception is like what? The provocation of the sickness. That means, actually, the cause of the sickness. Now, the cause of the sickness are said to be blood, or bile, or wind, of phlegm. This is the Ayurveda, say, understanding of the cause of diseases, and also it is accepted in the Pali commentaries too. So here, the provocation of the sickness really means the cause of sickness, the root cause of sickness, and then formation Yes. And the formation aggregate is like what? Recourse to what is unsuitable. That means doing things that are not suitable for your health. Eating bad food, something like that. So for example, eating bad food is like sankhara. And the cause of the disease, like phlegm or blood or whatever, is sanya. So the formation aggregate as object of clinging is like having recourse to what is unsuitable. So eating unsuitable food, staying in the cold for a long time, something like that. because it is the source of feeling, which is a sickness. And for it is said, feeling as feeling is the forms that they form, and likewise, because of unprofitable karma having been performed and stored up, resultant body consciousness has arisen accompanied by pain. The consciousness aggregate as object of clinging is like the sick man. So we have a sick dwelling place, and then what? Sickness, the cause of sickness, then another cause of sickness, and sick man. So these five aggregates are compared to this. They are also compared to the prison, the punishment, the offense, the punisher, and the offender. And they are also compared to the dish, the food, the curry sauce poured over the food, the server, and the eater. So these are all similes to be understood. Twice as to how to be seen, so how we should view them. The exposition to be known twice as to how to be seen, namely in brief and in detail. So they should be seen as enemy with drawn sword, and in a snake simile, as a burden according to the burden sword, and a devourer according to the to be devoured discourse, and the impermanent, painful, not self formed and murderous according to the Yamaka sword, and so on. So according to these sodas, we should view them as enemy and so on, and in detail also. Now, paragraph 225, as to good for one seeing thus. So good comes to be accomplished in one who sees in the two ways thus, in brief and in detail. And the way of definition should be known according to that. That is to say, firstly, one who sees the five aggregates of objects of clinging in the form of an enemy with a drawn sword, etc., is not worried by the aggregates. And by one who sees materiality, etc., in detail as a lump of froth, etc., is not one who sees a core in the coreless, who takes what is core in a coreless. And in particular, one who sees internal materiality as foul, ugly, fully understands nutriment. Fully understand really means not having akusala with regard to that thing. So with regard to here, fully understands nutriment means does not get akusala with regard to nutriment, with regard to ahara and so on. So whenever we find the word fully understand, we have to understand it in that way. He abandons the perversion of perceiving beauty in the foul, ugly. He crosses the flood of sense desire. He is loosened from the bond of sense desire. So flood, bonds, and all these come again. He becomes canker-free as regards the canker of sense desire. He breaks the bodily tie of covetousness. He does not cling with sense desire, clinging, and so on. And then, one who sees feeling as pain fully understands nutriment consisting of contact. That means nutriment as contact. You know, there are four kinds of nutriment. The real food, contact, volition, and what? The last one, consciousness. So the description is according to that. So that we come to the end of this chapter. But we'll have to go a little into the next chapter. The bases. There are 12 bases. And the order given here is different from order given in the manual. In the manual, the six external are grouped together and the six internal are grouped together. But here they are, and they are described in pair. So here we have what? Visible data base, and the eye base, visible data base. Ear, sound. Nose, odor. Tongue, flavor. Body, tangible data. Mind, dhamma. And then meaning. Now, I want to ask you the meaning of this expression. Paragraph 3. It relishes, thus it is an eye. The meaning is that it enjoys a visible datum and turns it to account. What is the meaning of that? Turns it to account. The Pali word here is vibhaviti. So it means to make it clear, to show it clearly. So enjoys a visible datum means make the visible datum clearly seen or something like that. And then with regard to sadda, I mean sound, it is emitted, thus it is sound. The meaning is that it is uttered. And the footnote is on the next page. So here in Visuddhimagga it is said that the meaning is that it is uttered. But if we take it just as it is, then the sadda or sound will not include sounds of others, like sounds of trees, sounds of rivers, and so on. Because it is said that it is uttered. So only that is uttered could be sound here. But actually, any sound is sound here. So we have to understand in another way. And that is, that you can find in the footnote. And then the next one is, it smells, thus it is a nose. Then next, it is smelled, thus it is odor. Now, the real meaning is just, it betrays, therefore it is odor. Because you know where something is when you get this, when you get the smell. So it is like betraying its place. You may hit something and then somebody gets a smell and then somebody knows where it is. So it is like betraying. So it betrays that it is older. The meaning is that it betrays its own physical basis. These are all grammatical definitions of the words chakku, rupa, sota, sada, and so on. Now the next one, it evokes life, thus it is a tongue, jihwa. And explanation, I mean, the footnote on the next page, at the end of the first paragraph, footnote is, this is the linguistic characteristic of the word jihwa. Now, linguistic characteristic, what does that mean? What the sub-commentary is saying is that, now, if you look at the definition of the word jihwa, you get jiwitahwa. Not jihwa, jiwitahwa. Jiwita is life and hwa means to call, something like that. So, it should be called jiwitahwa, but it is contracted into jihwa, and that is what is meant by the linguistic characteristic. It is a way of explaining words. Say, instead of saying jiwitahwa, people just say jihwa. And then, with regard to Dhamma, and end of the page 547, they cause their own characteristic to be born. That is incorrect. They bear their own characteristics. Thus, they are mental data, or thus they are Dhamma. They bear their own characteristic. Thus, they are Dhamma. Now, you see the word dharayanti, right? He took it to mean, he took it in a causative sense, but it is not. It is not causative here, because the root here belongs to the seventh conjugation. If you have studied Pali, you understand that. So it belongs to the seventh conjugation, therefore it is dharayati, like chorayati. But it is not causative. So it is not causative. So the meaning is that which bears its own characteristic is called Dhamma. So Dhamma has many meanings. I've told you this again and again. So the Dhamma here is defined as that which bears its own characteristic. So they bear their own characteristic. Thus they are Dhammas. I don't want to say mental data. And then the explanation of the word Ayatana in Pali. And the commentators are very, they take much delight in explaining words in different ways, say, as much as they can. So the word Ayatana can be divided into Ayatana, or Ayatana, or something like that. And then very fanciful explanations are given. So that is what he does here in paragraph 4. But even if we don't understand this, I think it's all right. So they are the basis, right? If you know Pali, it's good to read this. But if you don't know Pali, maybe it's not so helpful. And then in this section, the translator uses do come object, I come visible datum, and so on. What is C-U-M?
Yeah, you know, I think he's using Latin.
It's Latin.
It means with, W-I-T-H.
Oh, I with visible data.
There's no, it's not in English.
Oh.
In Latin.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we can just say N. Yeah? I and visible data. So the word Ayatana can have many meanings, and he explains them according to these many meanings. And whenever you find the word mental data, I think we should change it to Dhammas, because mental data may be misleading. So in paragraph 9, there are mental data, so please change them to Dhammas. Now, so in that paragraph, as to just so much, that means there are only 12 mental bases. I mean, 12 bases. So why are there only 12? So here the commentary explains. What is meant is this. The I, etc., are dhammas too, not mental data. He misunderstood the two words dhamma. The word dhamma by itself and the word with ayatana. So dhamma and dhamma ayatana. Now, the word dhamma just means something which bears its own characteristic. So we can just translate it as state. But in Dhammayatana, it is untranslatable. So he mixed these two. So here it should be, the I, etc. are Dhamma too. That being so, why is 12 bases said instead of simply Dhamma base? That means everything is called Dhamma. The I is called Dhamma, the ear is called Dhamma. So why call just Dhamma Ayatana, all of them, only one Ayatana, instead of saying there are 12 ayatanas, there are 12 bases. Why not have only one base, the base of Dhamma? That is what the commentary is explaining here. So instead of simply Dhamma base, it is for the sake of defining door come object for the arising. That means there are six doors and there are six objects. Therefore, according to the doors and objects, we have six bases, not only one base. Because there are six doors, eye door, ear door, and so on, and there are six corresponding objects. So there have to be 12 bases. And the last line on this page, for only the eye base is the door of arising, and only the visible database is the object of the continent. I think the of is missing there. Before the consciousness, please put the word of. So, the door of arising of consciousness, the object of consciousness group. And then another mental data there, but only one part of the mind base. In other words, the life continuum mind is the door of arising, and only the mental data, so only the Dhamma base, not common to all its objects and so on. And paragraph 15, as to how to be seen, here, all formed bases should be regarded as having no provenance and no destination. What's that? The Pali word simply is not coming from anything and not going to anything. So, not coming from anything, not going to anything. They just arise. They do not come from anything and they will not go to anything. They just arise and then they disappear. So that is what is meant here. What is provenance? Coming?
Well, it could be lineage, sort of, where it came from.
Yeah. And then, what more? Let me see. Oh. And then how they should be viewed. Paragraph 16. The internal bases should be regarded as an empty village because they are devoid of lastingness, flesh and self. And the external ones as village raiding robbers. Because they raid the internal ones. And this is said because the eye is harassed by agreeable and disagreeable visible objects and so on. That is from Sanyukta Nikaya. So, if you want to read the whole sutta, go to Kindred Sayings, Volume 4, page 109. And also further, the internal one should be regarded as like the six creatures, and the external ones like their resource. So six creatures. That also in Sanyukta Nikaya. So Kindred Sayings, Volume 4, page 131. And six creatures are a snake, a crocodile, a bird, a dog, a jackal, and a monkey. That means, suppose a man were to tie these creatures, say, tightly with the rope, and then the ropes were tied in the middle, so they were tied to one place, and then let them do what they like. So the snake want to go into the pit, the hole, and the bird want to fly, and the crocodile want to go into the water, and so on. So they cannot go because they are tied to one place, and then the strongest among them would take the others with him. So something like that. The five senses. Okay, now we come to the end of the ayatanas or bases. Now, what is meant by Dhamma base? Say, eye base means eye sensitivity, right? Ear base, nose base, tongue base, body base, it's okay. And then, what do you call it, visible database, sound base, odor base, tangible database. But what is Dhamma base? What is Dhamma base? Do you find that? No. What is Dhamma base? Now you have 12 bases, right?
Right.
Eye base, eye sensitivity, visible database, visible object, it's okay. Ear, nose, okay. Ear sound. Nose, smell, okay. Body, tangible data, okay. Mind, and Dhamma base, right? Mind base means all the 89 jhanas. So what is Dhamma base? 69? What are they?
16 of the Soto ladder, Nibbana,
Chapter 7. That's good. Now, you have it on page 551. I just want to point it out to you. The end of the first paragraph. The mental data, right? The Dhamma base. Let us call it Dhamma base. The Dhamma base is of many kinds when classified according to several individual essences or different individual essences of feeling or vedana, right? Perception, sanya. Formations, other jitasikas. Subtle matter, and nirvana. So, Dhamma base means these. Vedana, sanya, sankhara, subtle matter, and nirvana. You get the same thing in the seventh chapter of the manual. So, Dhamma base means one of these things, the feeling, perception. Actually, feeling, perception and formations are 52 jhetasikas. So 52 jhetasikas, 16 subtle matter and nirvana. How many?
69.
Good. Okay. So, next time, elements. Elements, faculties, maybe some truths. About 20 pages.